So anyone should make it. Then you bought me a pair of tefillin. That means I owe you. You know, you did it. You helped me out. You helped me put my pair of tefillin. A person who can't put his own tefillin on, you help him out. So did he just benefit him in terms of halachic hana? So you'll say, well, no, he put on him a tefillin. There wasn't a hana because the kiyum mitzvah may not be defined as a halachic hana.
Right.
So here the question is, well, what about if we're saying that ona, the mitzvah of ona is a mitzvah? So what difference does it make if you answer the wife's hana or your own hana that the Gemara says is going to be chal and you have to divorce her or be mefer your you got to matter your hana, matter your neder? So he says, amai mitzar v'ha mitzvos la v'honos nitnu l'ran es yesh lomar b'chiyom rinan mitzvos lo l'honos nitnu. So here again, like the Rashi, it's the kiyum mitzvah that we're focusing on that does not have the hana. Aval, he says, mikol makom I mishane gufei bahade de kayim mitzvah hana mikre. If there's some other incidental hana that's coming about because of your mitzvah, that's hana. So like you said, if the sukkah was very nice and very shady and it was a hot day outside, and in the sukkah was 10 degrees cooler, that may be a problem according to the Ran. Because yes, true, you're not, the kiyum mitzvah is not hana, but I'm getting a great hana by being in the sukkah. And I just answered the hana of the sukkah on me. So according to the Ran, that would be problematic because the kiyum mitzvah is not hana. But if there is some other hana, he says, b'hadei de mekayim mitzvah, that's hana mikre. And so too, when it comes to tashmish, yeah, there's hana. And therefore, that's why it's asur. That's why he says that if it's on him, it's asur. So you have here the first approach of the view of mitzvah. So I guess Rashi and Ran, probably the same. I mean, they focus both on the key mitzvah. Rashi just adds in that what it is. It's not just the key mitzvah, but it's an ol. That's really for our purposes.
Right.
It shows that the mitzvah is not just not given for benefit, therefore halachically in terms of neder is not hana, but the mitzvah is a ol on our necks. Now there are two other approaches just to wrap up this concept of mitzvah l'al naharos nitnu.
In short, any physical pleasure that I enjoy from doing a mitzvah, the sukkah is cool and comfortable.
Right, that would be
one's relationships with wife. That is definitely the pleasure.
That would be. Okay, the topic, as you see, is Torah, mitzvahs, burden or benefit. So it's going to be, I guess, the second part, mostly more hashkafa. But there is one section with definitely more halachic, more alumnish in terms of the topic of mitzvahs as a burden. Just as a point of introduction, first to Makoros. Have more Sanhedrin that we say before picking up also over the summer. Kol Yisrael Yeshem Chelkom Havash Emar Vamechum Tzidikim LaOlam Yirshu Aretz Neitzim Atoy Masay Yodai Lispar. So you have in that this idea of Om Haba, of Schar Om Haba. So we're not going to talk a lot about what Schar and Om Haba is about. You know, that is part of our Muna, right? They have in the Rambam, Yigim and the Karim, also an Imamin. You know, you have Schar Onesh, Gomel Tov Shomim Mitzvosov, Manish LeOvrei Mitzvosov. So part of our belief system is really the fact that there is Schar Onesh, that a person is accountable for his actions, that a person can't just feel that who cares what I do. It's no, there are consequences to what one does. But the schar in these makoros, or even more in Uksin, the Rechaim and Akasha, what we say after Pirkei Avos, the fikach hirba lahem Torah mitzvos, meaning what? That Hashem wants to lezakos es Yisrael. So this chus, presumably, is also Om Haba. So we're going to talk more about what happens in this world, and what is the attitude towards a mitzvah in this world. Is it viewed as a burden, as a pain, as something we have to do, as an onus on our yoke, or is it viewed as something beneficial? What is the right attitude? All right, so that's, again, we're going to touch upon Om Haba. Basically, it's going to be more an Om Hazeh, more of a practical approach. Right, so just in part two, mitzvos as a burden. What is the approach that views mitzvos not as beneficial, but as a burden? So just on the halachic section, Chag Marosh Hashanah, see, it didn't come out that clear. Omar Rav Yehuda, very top line, b'shofar shel ola lo yitaka, that a shofar of a korban ola, you cannot use to blow, v'imtaka yatsa, but if you blew it's okay. However, b'shofar shel shlomim lo yitaka, but if you have a, from a shlomim, you can't, v'imtaka lo yatsa, my time. Why is a ola good, b'diavad, and a shlomim not good? Mora says, time ola basm ilahi, therefore, kevan the ma'al ba nafgala l'chulin. So once you blow it, so you're over a me'ilah, but the result is that the shofar becomes chulin, therefore it becomes a fine that you could blow it and use, no problem. It's not ola kachim. However, shlomim, because a person has a hana, right, part of the shlomim goes to a person, goes to the Baal Bayis, therefore lav b'nei me'ilah ninu, and therefore stays tais kachim. So masu la rava, emas ma'al labaza taka, kika taka, right, my side is a little bit no good here. But what's the bottom line? He rather says the opposite. The Me'ilah is after the fact. You blew when it was still kashim. So really, both should not be good. So he said, Echad zeh, lo yatsa. No. Then he says, you know what? Then he said the following. No. Echad zeh, yatsa. Really, both are good. Whether it be a shlomim or a ola, the shofar of such an animal that you took from is fine. How come mitzvos lav lehonos nitno? Because mitzvos are not given for hana, the whole problem is you're getting hana from kadshim. But who said that this mitzvah is for the purpose of hana? So you're just doing a mitzvah. So that's not getting any pleasure from the mitzvah. And therefore, both shofros are perfectly okay. How does Rashi explain that? Look right there. I'll get to Rashi later. But basically, the idea being that the whole problem is being getting hana from kashim. But you're doing a mitzvah. Who said a mitzvah is really at all involved with hana? Another case where the Gemara mentions this concept, Gemara Nedarim. The Gemara says that a person, just last week's parsha, a person takes a neder that contradicts a mitzvah. It says it's chal, right? That actually works, and you can't do the mitzvah. And if you do the mitzvah against the neder, you're over on lo yachel dvaro. But a shavua, if it's a shavua, right, neder is always on the cheftza, on the object, and therefore, if you make some kind of, we'll see the example soon, if a neder on such an object of a mitzvah, the neder is going to be chal, but on the body, you have a chiyah to do a mitzvah, so you're going to make a shavua that I can't do a mitzvah, it's not chal, and you could totally disregard the shavua. So they each give examples. Rabbi and Rav both give examples. So here Rabbi says, Hadomar hana sukkah lai, Hadomar, if a person says that the hana of a sukkah is on me, right, Hadomar, that will be chal, but Hadomar shvua shalo ehenem min hasukkah. But if I take a shvua that I will not get hana from the sukkah, that will be chal. That's what Rabbi says that. Omar Rava, I can't. Both of those are not going to be chal. V'chim mitzvos lehanos nitnu. Even if you say that I'm not going to get hana from this sukkah, that will not prevent you from using the sukkah as a mitzvah, because you're not getting hana when you're sitting in a sukkah, right? You want to in your house. You're eating the sukkah. Hashem told you so, and therefore el amara. What's the case? No, hadomar yeshiva sukkah lai. If you answer the neder, the sitting in the sukkah, that is where the neder will be chal. But where it won't be chal is shvua shelo eshem. If you say, oh, good, I won't sit in the sukkah, nothing to do with hana, then you have that it will work, and you can't do it. So again, you have Rava showing, if a person says, I will not get hana from the sukkah, then so what? You still can get hana from the sukkah, you still can do a mitzvah with the sukkah, you can get hana. You can get a mitzvah. You can't probably in the middle of the summer stay out in the shade. That you can't do. But for the mitzvah, it's not hana, and therefore you can use it. The third mekor is Gemara Nedarim. And here you have, here you will have how to understand the concept. What exactly is, what does it mean? What exactly is the concept all about? Let's see the Rashi first on the number three, number six, and before we do the round, let's see the Rashi first. Rashi explains the Gemara by Shofar. Says what? Let's see the fourth line down. Lo lehonas nitnu. Rashi says liyisrael was not given fun of Yisrael lios kiyumam lehem hana for the kiyum, for the actual. I'm a kayam mitzvah, so then I got benefit, right? I got hana. I did a mitzvah. That should be beneficial. I got a mitzvah. That's not good, isn't it? Because no, that's not the point of the mitzvah. But what elo all al tzavarehem hemenu. That the point of the mitzvah is to be a all, to be a yoke on our necks, and therefore to say, I got great benefit, I did a mitzvah. That's not a benefit. That was an all. You just did what you had to do. And therefore to call it hana is not a issue at all. So clearly the Rashi's attitude, in terms of our question, it's a burden. The mitzvahs are not for hana. Don't look for the hana, and we're not even, that isn't the point of the kiyum mitzvah, is the idea. And the Ran, probably the same as Rashi, maybe you could, but he has the following question from the Gemara in Darim, the previous daf, where the Gemara has two cases where a person who says, Hanos tashmishech alayich, he says to his wife, that I'm ossering as a neder the hana of tashmish on you, that I can't give you hana of tashmish. Gemara says that's not going to work, because that's against a mitzvah of ona. Now, you can't just ask for tashmish for your wife, because that's not your right. You're against what the mitzvah commands you to do. However, the Gemara says, if you say hanos tashmishnech alai, and you ask yourself to get hana, that would work. Right? That would work. All right. So it comes around and says, "V'chi omar hanos tashmishnech amai mitzvah." Why is that usher? That would work to make it usher.
Where in the run is this?
This is the third. Fourth line, I'm sorry.
Fourth
line in the Ran.
Five?
I haven't put an arrow in my mind, but it's fourth line, down Vim Tomar.
Yeah, in the middle of the fourth line.
Middle of the fourth line.
In number five, okay.
All right, so you have these two cases.
Love out of tough.
If you take, you say, I know it's touch me, alayich, then that's not going to work. Then, but if you go ahead and say, on myself, right. It would work. So he comes around and says, same kasha by sukkah. How come by sukkah, if you say, Hanos of the sukkah is on me, that's chal, right? Because, I'm sorry, that will not be chal because of mitzvah lav mahar. The mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah is nothing to do with hana. And therefore, saying that hana of the sukkah is on me, that will not be chal because of mitzvah lav mahar nitnu. Right, that was Rava's opinion.
He could always build a really ugly sukkah, so he could sit in it, and he doesn't get a no because it's ugly.
No, so that was no. That's what we're talking about because
it doesn't matter.
But is that I'm doing a mitzvah? That's a no. Isn't it beneficial to get a mitzvah done? I'm getting a check upstairs, so isn't that a mitzvah?
I don't know.
That's the question. Is that the key of mitzvah itself?
About getting the hana from it. You may get a no. Maybe you're not going to get a no, but it doesn't matter.
No, that's exactly Ron's point. Is that we're not talking now of the hana of the sukkah is not. Some hana, it's very hot outside, I'll have some shade. That's not what we're talking about. Kiyum mitzvah itself, it does that get hana that itself should be counted. I did a mitzvah. That's if you can help me do a mitzvah, you benefited me. If I feel somebody helped me out to do a hana,
that would be mitzvahs, awesome. Mitzvahs are not giving, meaning the spiritual uplift that I get from performing a mitzvah. In other words, that in and of itself...
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
is not considered to be of any real... Value.
If a person feels spiritual uplifted, perhaps that's just his own. Not everybody feels that,
right.
Therefore, it can be not necessarily
that's
even.
Right.
That would be, that would be more with the Rava's approach. But whether a person, it's got to be right, if it's something spiritual, perhaps that kiyum mitzvah. I'm doing kiyum mitzvah, perhaps just to check upstairs. Hashem says, okay, you got now a check, and now
right.
You know that's chara. That will be whatever that means. Whatever that kiyum mitzvah
that is of no real import down here.
Right. It's not. Yeah. Now the Rava focuses, I guess, on. A different side of it, because he shows that what we say lav lahanos nitnu, that part actually I didn't put kfarakav here, but he says first before this piece is that the schar mitzvah, he focuses on the schar mitzvah. A person may say, okay, it's not the kiyum mitzvah per se that I did a mitzvah, I feel good, or I feel that I got a benefit by performing a mitzvah, but a mitzvah has schar, he says. So maybe I would say the schar mitzvah is the schar in Shemayim. Then I'll get a schar olam haba. Why isn't that considered to be a hana that would be problematic? And therefore the Gemara says, no, it's not called hana. He says, because he said the maisa is not migufa davar, but it's gorein lo tova. It gives you some, it's only a gram. That the schar mitzvah is only not a direct benefit, it's indirect benefit, that's schar, and that's why it doesn't count. And he gives to, as a proof a fourth case, actually, that was brought down about a person going to, he asers a mikveh, or mayan, a cold spring on himself. And now he wants to go to mikveh. Can he use that as a mikveh? So Mara says that if it is the winter time, and going to the mikveh, like, you know, going to Rizal's mikveh, that's not really so beneficial even in summertime, right? It's freezing cold, so it's gonna. So right then you're in the mikveh, it's gonna, you know, so that is net mutter, because that's not hana. However, in the summertime, for a nice, you know, you're going out to En Gedi, you know, go ahead and go to that mayan, that would be problematic because there's hana because you're hot. So he explains now, but what about? So we can read on the Kamam b'mudar hana b'mayin. She'enu tovel boim b'mos hacham. The first line of the Ritva. He can't be tovel in the summertime. She'u nene miguf hamayim. He gets cooled off. V'tovel bo b'mos hageshamim. She'enu nene miguf hamayim. Because he's not getting hana from the guf hamayim. V'af al pi she'gorim lo hana l'ha'oloso me'tumu l'tahar. Even though, wait a second, he's getting hana of becoming tahar. Why isn't that hana? He couldn't go into the basement. He couldn't eat truma. And now he can. Isn't that a benefit? Right, it's a benefit. So even in the winter time, it should be usher because of the benefit of becoming the hanav, becoming tahor. It says, no, ein hanazu neseret. Why? She'eno min hamayim. Again, that is not from the mayim itself. And therefore, he says, similar case is, what about chalitza? A person asers the chalitza sandal on him, on, the, I guess the woman is asers the chalitza sand on herself. So how could the chalitza give her the hana of now marrying whoever she wants? She's now, she was tied to this guy. She doesn't want to marry this guy. He doesn't want to marry her. And therefore, the chalitza has this, again, this indirect benefit of being matira. So again, that's not called hana because the, I guess, the halachic consequence of a mitzvah is not called hana. Even though the consequence is beneficial, the consequence on a practical level is beneficial. It has hana. But that's not going to be called halachic hana. And so too, schar mitzvah, the schar you're going to get in Shemayim, I would have thought that's a benefit. That's a kiyum itself. All right, well, it's more the, it's explaining, like, unlike Rashi would say that it's an ol, but what about the schar? But the schar itself, that's incidental, that's just indirect, and therefore is not called a hana to aser in the realm of neder and shvuah.
The vine reward's a consequence. It's not inherent to what I'm doing.
That's it. The consequences are not going to be.
And the pleasure which is outlawed if I'm taking a neder has to be inherent
direct
to what I'm doing.
What would Rav say about Tashmi? If you say, well, that's direct, right? That's direct.
Yeah,
or a mayan in the summertime, yeah, that would be also awesome because it's also going to be direct
kind of. Maybe better is short term versus long term gratification. If you're getting gratification immediately, then that's another. You're right away getting physical.
In the realm of neder, I don't know what makes a difference.
No, not neder, no, but itself. I mean, you can.
We'll see that in terms of the later on, in terms of the schar mitzvah, we'll see how some make that chiluk, whether it's not, whether it's direct, you know, immediate, or whether it's in the future, will be a chiluk that we'll see in the other realm, in terms of schar mitzvah, or how to view it. Huh?
I'm not at all fluent in Hebrew, and I'm losing yet.
Oh, sure, okay, I'll.
Thanks.
What word, any particular word right now, or?
About 50% of what you've been saying.
Oh, okay, sure. I'll try. Okay.
He's not getting hana right now.
So hana, the word hana is pleasure.
Oh, no, he's getting hana. Right.
Okay.
Right now.
I was wondering, though, we're playing with the word hana. To me, it has two meanings. It's pleasure and it's also benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe what you're doing is you're asr, when you take these vows, you're saying, I don't want any pleasure. But you're not asring the benefit that you might get from doing that. There's a difference between benefit and pleasure.
That's why I thought of the ugly sukkah, because you're not taking pleasure from an ugly, filthy sukkah, even though, you know,
is benefit. Well, is the whole question then? You're saying the whole.
You're not deriving pleasure.
The original thought was that it was a benefit. In other words, is, I mean, If you define benefit as indirect,
I take a
pleasure.
I outlaw, I out myself, I have no hana'ah from this. What am I saying?
In which,
Gary's saying a very good point.
But benefit also be problematic.
In other words, am I outlawing pleasure? Now, this may not be a pleasurable experience. It's late August, it's late October. It's cold outside.
Right.
Ding dang it. I don't want to sit in this sukkah. But frankly, I'm doing it for Allah. Is there pleasure? No. Gary's point is well taken. Is there benefit? Yeah, there's benefit. The benefit of some book is I get brownie points upstairs. I'm a kind of mitzvah. And the argument seems to be amongst the Rishonim that when you take an oath to forbid yourself to have hana'ah, Gary's definitions, I think, sound pretty good, Moshe.
If a person says...
I'm outlawing pleasure, not consequential benefits.
But the Mishnah says, if a person says to us, I'm answering benefit enough from you to give me. He can't go ahead and wash his car. He can't go ahead and do anything that benefits him or gives him pleasure. It's not just going ahead and...
What are the examples you're giving? Washing my car is
it a benefit? If pleasure is just physical, then he can't go ahead and feed me. But if you're going to say benefit is just... So he can't paint my house, he can't give me any benefit.
Because all those things are giving me direct pleasure, aren't they? Either sticking it in my mouth, or give me a back rub, or washing my car, painting my house, are all things that give me either...
In the realm of neder, I don't know, there's really a difference in the realm of... In the realm of neder, what difference is there between benefit and hana? How do you call it? I mean, it's just more syntactical.
In English, we're making some kind of differentiation, but I don't know that there actually is any differentiation between the two.
I don't know that you can really separate the two.
That's what we're struggling here with these Rishonim to define exactly.
I say in their halachic realm, I think benefit is also defined as hana'ah in the halachic realm of in the world of nedarim.
Should I further refine it? Gary refer to spiritual benefits.
Right, doing a mitzvah has a benefit.
Physical pleasure and physical benefits are both forbidden when you take an oath. Spiritual benefits.
Oh, so that could be
that
what
is
meant
what
the by the
mitzvah. It's not a problem.
If the Rashi
sitting
says,
in the sukkah when it's freezing cold does allow me a spiritual benefit, there is no pleasure. And that's why I'd be allowed to do so. If it's cold outside, jump into the mikvah, right? I'm getting the only thing I'm getting out of this is a spiritual benefit, i.e., that now I'm no longer tummy, I'm no longer contaminated, Bob, I'm now pure, all right? That's a spiritual benefit.
But that could be exactly what is meant by kiyum mitzvah, the performance of the mitzvah,
right?
The actual kiyum, the actual the fulfillment of the mitzvah itself, which is in the spiritual realm, perhaps that's
right.
What Rashi that could be what the Rashi and the Ran mean. That's fine. That's okay.
Right.
But the fulfillment of the mitzvah,
the action itself, is not
that fulfilled it is not going to be counted as hana'ah
because it doesn't afford me physical
not because
pleasure.
The benefit because
and it doesn't afford
because
me physical benefit of physical benefit of physical pleasure. Is there a spiritual value? Yeah, but spiritual value and spiritual
in the realm that's
is not halachic.
That's exactly
in the realm
according to Rashi in the realm. That's exactly what mitzvahs lav lehanos nitnu mean.
Okay,
that's the term that mitzvahs are not given for pleasure slash benefit. The spiritual fulfillment, or the schar, as the Ritva says, or the fact that I have a mitzvah now under my belt, saying, okay, now I have one great more mitzvah to when I'm Rosh Hashanah, having my deeds, good deeds, and bad deeds weighed. We'll see that will come up.
Right.
You know, so that benefit is not called a pleasure or a benefit in that, and that's,
in
that could be
right.
that's Rashi. And the Ran, and perhaps the Ritva, if you want to add on in terms of that difference. The third novel approach is the Rashba. The Rashba asks the same question as the Ran.
Number eight?
This is eight.
Number eight.
And the same question of, of the Ran, in terms of how come if a person says, Hana Tashmishech, alive, he says that the benefit of, or the pleasure of having relations with my wife is now forbidden for me, that type of vow would work, and therefore he has to either release his vow by going to a sage and to a rabbi to say, okay, you know, I made a mistake, or he has to divorce his wife. That kind of, however, by saying the reverse, he's forbidding the pleasure on his wife, of him to give her pleasure, that would not work at all. That would not would work. So he says,
maybe he never gave her pleasure in the first place.
Okay, then he should divorce her anyhow. Then she anyway get divorced.
What are you saying? We're talking about the royal husband's book. Okay, I hate to meet you a lot, but you know.
So miu akati kasha. He says, "Afilu lo k'misiran, lo k'mina ba'omer hanos tashmish shechla." Even if he says he's in a vow, he's forbidding the pleasure of a marriage relations on himself. But why is that forbidden? The mitzvah, who it's a mitzvah, and mitzvah's owner. Well, mitzvos lav lehanos nitnu, and mitzvos were not given for the pleasure. So again, why is it asur? Why is it maishana? Why is it different? Mimudur hana me shofar. He's allowed to blow the shofar for a mitzvah. Now he should answer like the Ran and say, "Well, that was hana, that was pleasure that I got from the actual act, and that's not spiritual; that's actual pleasure." So here's an answer like that. He said, "Yesh lomar, because the mitzvah zu eino ella machmata. The mitzvah is only because of her, and not because of him." Ona is really stems from his wife. Umishum dishtabed la, and because he now is like bound and committed to her, therefore, you know, the Torah says you must now subservient to her to fulfill her needs, and therefore you can't say that you can't get enough. In other words, if you directly say to her that you can't get pleasure from my having relation with you, that is against the Torah's obligation that gave her the right to have the pleasure. However, Kevan de Omar Hanos Tashmishech Olai, since he forbade his own pleasure from her to give him pleasure, and then what happens? Machmat Nidro, because of this vow, Pokashi Budamina. So almost incidentally and willy-nilly, you know, what happens? That he no longer can get pleasure from her. So the whole, indirectly, the mitzvah goes away. He can no longer do this mitzvah because he removed himself from it with this expression, this vow. And there's no mitzvah really on his part to get pleasure. So mitzvah him to get pleasure. So he now forbids him getting pleasure. That works. Now, true, the consequence of that is that he can't have relations. Okay, so I have to divorce her. But the mitzvah right now, mitzvah lo lehonos nitno, this concept can't really frontally attack or remove that hana that he will get, can't permit the hana, the pleasure he's going to get, because there's no mitzvah for him to get pleasure. And therefore, he says, that's why the neder works. Now, the way the Achronim understand the Rashba is that mitzvos lo lehonos nitnu does not just take care of the pleasure, the spiritual pleasure, but even permits actual physical pleasure from the actual mitzvah. And this explains, I mean, the Rashba is very nice to Masukka, because who doesn't get benefit, except for, you know, in Bavel for sure, it's hot, you know, how often is it so cold, and we have cold sukkah sometimes. But quite often, sukkah is beautiful, and it's hot outside, and sukkah really is a perfect, it's a perfect weather to make it, so that would be usher. So according to Rashba, according to others, yeah, according to Rashi, Ran, Ritva. But according to the Rashba, no. I'm doing a mitzvah, so I'm in the sukkah. The mitzvah will actually permit all, even hana, that is directly gotten from the mitzvah itself. Because if it was a problem, he should have answered like the Ran answered. The fact that he gave a different answer, the way the Rashba has explained, is that he permits all forms of hana that are gotten from the mitzvah.
Is the bottom line, though, that every mitzvah you do for the mitzvah, kesara, sara,
Right. Now I told him some lumbus, right, why?
The reason why we do mitzvahs is because Hashem commands us
to... Right, so that will be... So we have to reform. But that approach that you're saying is we're trying to understand how can it be? How can the Rashba say that the mitzvah? I'm getting physical pleasure from the mitzvah, and that's permitted because of the concept. So you're saying, well, that wasn't my point. I'm trying to do the mitzvah. Right. If I have incidentally, so that's not my problem. That would be a way to approach it. We'll see that very soon from Soloveitchik, how he explains the concept. But just one to answer one other difficulty with the Rashba, I didn't quote the inside here.
Summarize a quick point with the Rashba difference for the other Rishonim. He says that even deriving physical pleasure in the act of doing a mitzvah is still called mitzvah's lab.
Right, still subsumed under that.
And the reason why, he says, again, going back to the original question, a guy takes an edim and says, I will derive no benefit from relations with you. It's going to work, even though it undermines the marital relationship. Not vice versa, is because
there's no mitzvah on him to get hana. The Torah does not command, he doesn't have to get hana. There's no mitzvah on him to get hana. So he now is offering hana, it works. There's no mitzvah to tell him, and no, you have to get hana. Her, if he answers her hana,
right.
But her hana, there's a mitzvah of ona, that's what it's all about.
Okay.
So you can't directly attack and get, and remove that mitzvah with a vow, but you can remove your pleasure
right.
with a vow, and it has that consequence of now ruining the mitzvah. Okay, that's just a incidental to side, it's indirect, and therefore it you can't apply the concept to that type of a vow. The question that's asked, and Avraham Lewin discusses this point, well, why then can't you go to mikveh in the summertime, in the cold spring? I'm getting pleasure from the coolness of the water. So all others explain because that was pleasure from the actual the spring getting cooled down in summertime. According to Rashba, why would that be a problem? So the way that the Admiluim says, because you get hana after the mitzvah. When you come out and you're still dripping wet and it's not, it's so hot outside and you're getting cooled off, says that's why it's not, mitzvah's over, you're tall already.
You're at, that's the hana you're at.
That's the hana.
In the water's form, you get out of the water's a problem.
Right, you're still
wet. There's a fresh air on you.
Right, feels great. And that's why the Rashba would answer why the neder of the spring, cold spring, would still be forbidden, even though he holds that the mit concept of Olahos Nitnu still applies to actual and Rosh. Now, getting just in terms of the Rashba, how do you understand this? So here, Mislofeshik in the Masorah journal discusses this topic. He has other questions also to answer with this concept, and he says.
In the other line? Number 10?
Yeah.
The underlying line.
Yeah, so just to introduce this. He calls him a chol and buying rava about incidental hana. A person, let's say, he's walking down the street, and he is one of these food stands is cooking the basav chalav, cooking meat and milk together. Now, you can't get pleasure from cooked meat and milk. But you're going to walk by the block, and you're going to the smells, and you're going to go in your nose. You're going to you just have to walk down this block. Is that permitted? Can you still hold your nose, or do you have to? Go about or across the street, and what exactly are you allowed to walk by? And yes, you'll smell it, but you're not having kavanah for the smell. Is that permitted or not permitted? So that's machlokes Abaye and Rava.
I always had that problem with the Stella Door Company that's still in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
By the Major Deacon. I used to drive from my family, we lived in Mount Vernon. If we drove from the city up the Major Deacon during Pesach, I always wanted it. Smelled great.
Right.
Smelled great. A mile out.
Oh, but that's not Basel Chalav.
No, but it's Chomix from Pesach.
Oh, I'm Pesach. I mean,
but the week of Pesach, right. Was there any problem? I don't show you a question. Any problem driving up the Major Deacon past the Stella Dora Company? It's the same issue.
Smells
great. I'm enjoying the Chomix over Pesach.
Yeah. Well, over the years, Rabbi, during Pesach, I went to the circus, right?
Right.
Bring our own sandwich, everything else. We had to do stuff all around.
Hot pretzels and...
That's right.
And Shiloh passing hot dogs to somebody else.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So here, the Mara has two lashonos. If it's whether Abaye and Rava argue, if it's efshar v'lom, whether or not it's possible to avoid. I mean, if it's not possible to avoid, or if it is possible to avoid, we're not getting into that mahomachlokas. But the Gemara then ties it into the concept of davar shem skavir on Shabbos. If I'm doing one act, and incidentally I'm doing an act that's permitted. And then the classic example: I'm dragging furniture outside of my backyard, and it may be heavy enough that when I pull the furniture, it may make grooves in the ground, And those grooves are beneficial, meaning I may want to plant in there afterwards, or I want to put grass seed down. If it's, I'm going to tear my lawn up, that's probably not good at all. But if it's a situation where sulfuring the ground is going to be beneficial, but that's not my point. I just want to drag the chair over so I can sit down. It may not make a groove, so Rabbi Shimon says that it's permitted, and Rabbi Yehuda says that it's not allowed, except if it's for sure going to happen, then that's a psik reisha, that for sure will happen, and then it's... See, here, the Rebbe understands that whole idea the following way. So, Bir Din, right, what's underlined, Bir Din Asugya Nira Lomar, all right, that the Hana, the Memela Mutares, that Hana that is coming incidentally is permitted, in terms of that case of the Chameitz and the Basel Chal. The Ein Lasar Hana, Elahecha, you can't forbid pleasure, Elahecha, the Ika Maisa Mahana. So what does that mean, incidentally? It means if I'm doing an action, and this action attaches itself and is defined as action A on Shabbos, that's permitted. Then, B'tzir shal Dovah Shem Miskaven, and trying to give the picture of Dovah Shem Miskaven, what happens? It's a little bit, that the Maisa Nasame, the grooves in the ground, that's coming by itself. I'm not doing that action because my intention is action A, that's permitted. If incidentally something else happens, it doesn't attach to my action because that was being done just by itself.
But the psikresha, then it's definitely...
Right, psikresha then is a merger of the two actions. But if it's not a psikresha, then it could be separated. So my drinking had nothing to do with the fact that it's going to happen, right? And Hua Dinami says... Sheyeshlo Leo's mutter b'yisur hana, because the me'acha she'ein ha'maisa misyaches ein love. Since the action is not going to be the hana is not going to be attached, or the act of hana is not going to be attached to him, because he's doing a mitzvah. Hareza kanod remela mibli sheyiyeh sham ha'maisa hamana. So the chiddush being, you need for yisuri hana, like you need for Shabbos, a maisa. A Maisa Shabbos that's forbidden, so too you need a Maisa Mahana, you need an action that is an action that creates or gives you that pleasure. But if your action is a Maisa Mitzvah, like here's the Rashba, the Rashba, since my intention is sitting in the Sukkah, that's my action, I'm sitting in this Mitzvah, that's a Maisa Mitzvah, sitting in the Sukkah. I feel pleasure, I'm getting pleasure from the coolness, okay, but who cares, that's just happening by itself, I'm not doing it, it's happening by itself. And so he would say, possibly, even having marital relations, if his mind is set on the owner, so it's possible that pleasure he's getting is not really, he's not doing it. He's getting pleasure, but there's no mice somehow, there's no action that is related to that pleasure.
It's more difficult.
And therefore, well, he has to be lishem shemayim.
Driving at the major deacon is one thing, but the other thing... It's by definition an act that one.
All right. Well, that's
we know he would. He, which is just false.
That's why he couldn't answer that answer. He couldn't give that answer because he felt that the action is a maisa ona, the maisa mitzvah, and therefore it's going to be that pleasure is incidental, is menela. It's like the making the grooves in the ground, and that's why he would hold that way. So again, you have three approaches to the concept. Is this hana the hana of the kiyum, the fulfillment of it? Is it the hana, the fact that schar, the reward in olam haba, is not called hana? Or according to the Rashba, the concept takes out the action from the hana, and therefore the hana is coming incidentally. Not really, you're not doing that. You're just getting hana from left field. It's not really your action, and therefore permitted. Back to our original question, though, either way you have, for sure, I mean, according to Rashi, and more than against the Rashba, is that the mitzvahs are being done for a burden, not being done for the goal of giving us pleasure, it's being for a burden. Now, furthermore, two other just ideas of where it's spoken about the fact that a mitzvah is a burden. You have it in the Sifra, bottom of page 2, Reb Lezer Omer, this is quoted by Rashi at the end of Kedushin. Mark and Paras Kedoshim, where it talks about trying to stay pure and not to do the ways of non-Jews. And it says there that a person, though, should not say, you know, I don't like pork, I don't like bacon, it's disgusting, they roll out in the mud. Who wants to eat it anyway? A person should not say that. However, Aval Efshi should say, the attitude should be, no, I want to, you know, it probably tastes very good, all the goyim like it, you know, it's probably tastes very tasty. But Maya said, what can I do? V'ovi shebishamayim gozer akach. Right? What can I say? And my son used to tell me, he used to listen to the ball games, and I got very upset when he was younger. He would held the Bergen commercials and on the radio, and they would say, he was like, wow, it must be so good. They're all, you know, the commercials really play up how tasty this thing is. I didn't like him saying that, because it's like, oh no, well, you know, he's... But the Gemara, the Sifra, says that that's actually the way, the proper approach. That watching that sizzling burger or the cheeseburger, you know, it's probably very tasty. But Hashem said no. So what do you see? You see, again, the attitude is not to appreciate, not to go ahead and say my benefit, but more so to say that, what can I say? Look, God said no, so we gotta view it that way. Furthermore, you have in the Rambam. The Rambam, Mishmon, this is what we spoke about this before Shavuos. This Rambam, where he questions the philosophers. He has the Greek philosophers about what is better. Is it better for a person to be naturally good, where he just he has no Yetzirah at all, he just does the right thing, he knows intuitively, and he has no desires really for anything bad? Or no, is it better for a person to be who fights his Yetzahara, who fights his evil inclination, he wants to do things, and yet he's able to overcome it? Who is on a higher level, in the eyes of God? So the Greek philosophers felt that a person should always, in a higher level, if you are pure, you're a high level if you naturally feel you don't have at all any desires. The Rambam's approach is, depends on the mitzvah. And he says that the mitzvos that are intuitively and improper, you know, where you're talking about stealing and killing and harming somebody in Lashon Hara, that is better to be, not to have desire for them. But it comes to mitzvos that are not so logical, then, you know, like kashrus, or here the basa chazir, the eating the cheeseburger, so what could be the big deal? So then, Lefum Tzar Agri says, that is, the point is, the more it's difficult, the more you overcome, the greater schar you have, and therefore it's better to be that way. If you have, you shouldn't feel bad if you have desire for a cheeseburger, that's fine, it's no problem, because why would you not have a desire? You're, you know, physical, it's like eating, so then it should be good. But therefore it's okay to have, he has these two approaches in terms of what's better. Going to number 12, just a pshat that I heard once from Rabbi Slavechik. It says in the Seres Adibros, the introduction pasuk says, "Vaydaber Elokim," Hashem spoke, "as called Varma Ela," all these words, "Bnei Israel," and it says, "Lame more to say." The word at the end of the pasuk is "lame more," and Rashi says, ask the question, why does it say "lame more"? Usually in the Torah, when it says God spoke to Moshe "lame more," it means what? For him to repeat it to the Jews. I'm telling you, lame more means to say again to somewhere. But here, God's talking directly to the Jews. So why did he say lame more? Hashem spoke to the Jews. So why say to say? So the Medrash has two answers why this is machlokas. Lame more, Rashi says, this is Mechilta, Rashi calls it Mechilta, part of the Mechilta. Milamei shahoyo omrim al hein hein va'alav lav. That there was a response. Lame more was for the Jews to answer God. What kind of answer they said? If God said, keep Shabbos, they said, yes, we'll keep Shabbos. If God said, don't kill, they said, no, we're not going to kill. Al hein hein v'alav lav. Rabbi Akiva says, no. Al hein hein v'alav hein. On the negative, on the positive, they said, yes, we'll keep Shabbos. And don't kill, yes, we're not going to kill. So to ask Rabbi Soveitchik, what's the difference? Who really cares? Like, why is it?
It's a strange problem.
Why argue? So he had this very insightful pshat. He says, the difference is the following. If you tell your child, listen, I don't like this boy Johnny, he's a horrible influence on you, don't play with him. So the kid may have, he's good friends with this kid Johnny. So there's two things the kid may say to you. May say to you, yes, daddy. Or he'll say, no, I don't like him either. I'm not going to play with him. There's a big difference. If he says yes, daddy, that means that he's upset. He really wants to play with him, but he'll follow your command because you're the father and you told him don't play with that kid. But if he says, no, I'm not going to play with him, it shows he agrees with your command. He also saw that there's a problem. And that's the machlokas, he says. That according to Rabbi Yishmael, the approach is to agree with God. Love, don't kill. No, we're not going to kill. Of course not. But if we say, yes, we're going to follow you, then we may say to ourselves, what's wrong with killing? But anyway, God said, no, it's no. What's nafka mina lahalacha? Well, yeah, killing somebody is a problem. What about a person who's suffering because of cancer? What about a person who's 100 years old who's suffering in a respirator? Can you pull the plug? So if you say, lav, no, I won't, then, well, that's because I don't agree with actual killing. But let's say cases of abortion, maybe, I'm not going to agree. But if you say, yes, I'll do what you say, then you'll tell Lach. Lach says, no, it's no. You're not questioning it all. And the Rav said that Rashi actually quotes with Rabbi Shmuel, but he says, nowadays he feels there's so much gray area going on. And back, I guess, in the 70s, he gave this talk. He said, the approach has to be Rabbi Akiva. That it's a burden. Even when it comes to mitzvahs, like the Rambam said, you should naturally feel you shouldn't do it. You should still take the approach that it's a burden. Because if you're not, you're going to start then questioning the gray area of halacha and say, yeah, I agree with not killing somebody, murder, but what about cases of abortion, euthanasia? You'll start
rationalizing.
And therefore you have to accept God with the law, even Allah, hey, and I'll follow whatever the halacha says, without any difference. That was... But again, you see the approach, that has to be acceptance. Then you have a third approach of the burden aspect of tamei mitzvos. Tamei mitzvos. Gemara Bracha says, a person should say, Al-kan tzipor yagir rachamecha ve'al tov yizachar shimcham mod modim mishtah. That a person who gets a daven and says, he wants to be innovative, and he says, please have mercy on us like you had mercy on the bird on the bird's nest. Because what's the halacha says, that if you want to take the eggs, you have first chase away the mother bird. The mother bird shouldn't feel, well, that's what we're adding on. Why is that? Why God said that? Because presumably the mother shouldn't see you taking her chicks, taking her eggs. So just like God had mercy on though that the mother bird, so to have mercy on us, we say that was a very bad tefila. We tell the guy be quiet, kick him off the chiyam b'chazan. Right? How come? Well, there's two reasons. One reason is because your matil, this is on the third line, matil kina b'maisim bereishis, because you're going to go ahead and bring jealousy to other creations. Right? God, there's no law that if you're going to shech the child, you got to kick away the mother animal. Right? You can do it in front of her even. There's no law like that. I mean, maybe it's not nice to do, but God didn't command it. So God only cares about birds, doesn't care about animals. So that's why you shouldn't go ahead and bring that up. The other answer, though, is, right, to the fourth line, you're making God into some merciful being. The Eino Elixir, these are decrees. These mitzvahs, don't view them as all merciful decrees. The Xeros, they're just, you got to do them. Don't start deciding and rationalize, oh, this is good, this is not good, this is merciful, not merciful. Then you're going to start saying, well, what about killing a moat? That's not rational, and that's not merciful, and other things are not merciful. So you're going to start view them as gzeros, it's a burden, you must do them, don't ask any questions. That seems to be the approach of the Gemara. Don't give reasons for it, don't start saying what your reasons are. This gets into the issue of tamei ha-mitzvos, bottom of page 3 as well. Rav Amar lo nitnu mitzvos el tzari from the brios, literally to refine us, but the way you can, or does God really care if we shecht over in the front of the neck, back, and really, what's the difference? It's just the animal's dead, it's dead. God did it just to, in a way, to make us into good soldiers, obedient people. That some mitzvahs, it sounds in this medrash, and there's no reason for them. It's being done just to keep us in line. Why should I do it? Because I said so. That's why you have to do it. The soldier in the army, you can't question the general. You can't question your authority. You got to do what he says, and that's it. Just follow orders. That's what it sounds like in this medrash, that the mitzvahs are to make us into, to follow orders. And there's a whole approach in the Rishonim, the Torah Meis Yosef, just also to not encourage people to find reasons for mitzvah. So that, what does that all imply? Is that don't look for benefit. Don't look for how I gain from the mitzvah. Do it because that's it. We're slaves to God, and that's how we have to follow it.
So we shouldn't look for a reason that there should that's, be a nick in the blade of the knife, that the blade should be perfectly sharp?
No, you have to, but why do you have to?
Because it's supposed to make us
because
sensitive
that,
to...
Well, that's not what he says. According to that approach is, you can do because that's what the halacha says. Why? Don't give me why. You think the reason is because it will hurt the animal?
Yeah.
It's not maybe the hune. It's not that point. If you really want to kill that animal, don't kill it at all. Right? What does Peter say? Don't kill anybody. Don't kill animals at all. You know, if you really want to, you'd be so firm now by the neck. You know, that's cool. If you're going to start saying that, to be merciful, we're going to go to the next step. So therefore, just treat it, act as a, it's a burden. This whole we've spent all the time so far just on the burden aspect, and hopefully we'll get to some time on the benefit. We want to get benefit also,
get
here, right?
I can, you know.
Okay, so it's all negative side of things.
Well, I just have to come back to the second half of this. Can't get finished too late.
Okay, so let's try to go through these. When is it allowed? Can you seek benefit or can you not seek benefit? So you have here the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. I think Nisocho says Al Tiyu Kavan Hamashamshel Rav Amas Hamaschar. Ella, how you cover them again? So the same approach sounds like people can eved that serves the master not to get reward. So again, you see, you cannot seek benefit. However, many achronim ask the following question from three gemaros that shows you're allowed to. First of all, Gemara Rosh Hashanah talks about a person who's allowed to say to give tzedakah and to say I'm giving tzedakah in order for my son to get a refuah shlema or for me to get olam haba. They're allowed to seek benefit. Maron Brachos talked about Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera was tired, he got a little exhausted in learning, he went outside to take in some fresh air. But he said, why should I waste my time outside? So he sat in front of the base medrash. So when a sage walks out, he can get up and give him honor. Why? He said, let me stand up and get agri, get me get schar. So again, he's seeking reward. Why? If he said tzaddik, why is he going out? He just canceled the reward. He didn't say to show respect for the sage. He said, because I want to show him respect. He says, I want to get reward. Thirdly, it talks about why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu want to go into Eretz Yisrael? How come? Was it because he wanted to taste the fruits? It says no. It says no to do the mitzvahs. Why? The Lashon Gemara is lekabel schar, to get reward. How can this be? How could we say don't be like a slave? Be like a slave. Don't be like a person who just wants reward from God. You have your three sources that show you're allowed to go ahead and do mitzvahs and say I'm doing it because of the reward. So one answer, Tosfot, number 19 over there, he says the following, it depends. If you're going to go ahead and do it for the reward and then be upset if you don't get the reward, that's not allowed. A person who says, I'm going ahead and I'm going to give tzedakah because I want to refuah shlema for my son or for my father, whatever it may be, and he doesn't get refuah shlema, you're going to say, I shouldn't have done the mitzvah. That's not allowed. You can't go, if you're going to be mischar, you're going to go where you regret the action. If you don't see the immediate reward, then that's forbidden. But if you want to go ahead and do it for the reward, that's perfectly permissible to look for the reward, even om hazeh, even to say, you know, to get some benefit. I'm giving tzedakah, so I get double gall payment back. Then that's allowed, no problem. Because if you don't get paid back, you can't go ahead, though, and be upset if it does not happen.
I think if you're faced with some immediate succumb, say you're like hanging on the edge of a cliff by one finger, and you're saying, if I survive this, I'm going to give tzedakah. If you don't survive, you're not giving tzedakah. So it doesn't really matter.
Oh, that's in that case, but let's say... Right, that's okay. But in the case where your life is somebody else's life that you're trying Tmima, Rabbi Epstein and Baruch Shamar, he has the following approach, a very innovative novel approach to his difference, and he says that depends on the mitzvah. He says some mitzvahs you have to do. Tefillin, you have to do. So to say, I'm doing tefillin because of the schar of tefillin, that will be forbidden because that will be a violation of Tikkun Yisrocho, where he said, don't be like a slave that just does it for the reward. However, like Rabbi Zera, who could have relaxed in the shade in some tree somewhere, Or Moshe could not have gone to Eretz Yisrael. Nobody blamed him. And you're going ahead out of your way to do a mitzvah that you didn't really have to do, then you're allowed to do that kind of mitzvah for reward. You're allowed to actually have intention because you didn't have to do it. There's no major mitzvah kavua that you have to set mitzvah, which must be done. With the rishus, you are allowed to. That's one answer. The other answer he says is that it depends on what you said earlier, immediate gratification or future gratification. You're not allowed to do a mitzvah for immediate gratification. That's the eved who can't get pras. Pras is immediate gratification. But for mitzvah, for some ultimate reward, om haba, that's perfectly permissible to have that attitude, to say, to tell somebody, do this for the reward, that's okay. That is not a violation of serving your master in order to get reward. That's as far as seeking benefit. The next thing is the schar mitzvah in olam hazeh. What about that? So the contradiction really comes to the fact you have coming up. We have, I guess, the end of the summer, Kisavo and Chakosai, you have the Torah. Just take the Shema. Throughout the Torah, it says, if you do what's right, you'll get reward. You'll have rain, you'll have pleasure, you'll have animals, you have all the riches. If you don't, you won't. So the Torah clearly is trying to encourage us through material rewards. So that's one approach. Yet the Gemara in Kiddushin has a whole discussion about this whole topic of getting reward for mitzvot, not reward for mitzvot, and it has an opinion of Rabbi Yaakov that says char mitzvah ba'olam hazeh leka. What is the exact char mitzvah b'hai alma leka? Rabbi explains a contradiction in two in a brayso and mishnah by saying char mitzvah b'hai alma leka. That char mitzvah in this world doesn't exist. So the question becomes, well, how could he be against the Torah? The Torah itself says, behave, you get this. You don't behave, you don't. So how could Rabbi Yaakov have, how could any opinion exist that the schar mitzvah in this world does not exist? So there are three ways to approach this contradiction. The first is Talmud Dvorah. He discusses the following. I'll give you a mashal. Sometimes after a ball game, you have the star player, the one who hit the home run, when the game gets interviewed, and they say, for appearing on our program, you're going to get a $50 gift certificate to some restaurant. Right? Now, is that the reward for hitting the home run to win the game? What does he care? He's making $1 million, each game he plays. So why does he care for a $50 gift certificate to this restaurant? So that's not reward. That's, it sounds like if a person who doesn't know anything about baseball, about what the salaries are, maybe back in the 30s, there was actually a good reward if you got $50. That was a lot of money back then. But so he says that schar in this world, there is schar in this world, but it's inconsequential in comparison to what's out there in Olam Haba. And therefore, this, what Rabbi Yaakov meant, the Torah's reward of all this, that's not really reward. Hey, we think it's reward. But that's reward. That's like $50 to when you're making $1 million. So the real reward is Olam Haba. And what you get in this world, a little pleasure, a little peanuts, that's nothing in comparison. That's one approach. The Rambam, Hilchos Teshuva, his approach is that the point of schar, the point of all those promises in the Torah, is not for the pleasure or the reward itself, but the point is to get more reward, to get more schar, more mitzvos. If a person is poor, a person is unhealthy, sick, and bad, he can't do mitzvos, he just can't. So the Torah promises, if you do mitzvos, I'll make it easier for more mitzvos. Schar mitzvah is a mitzvah, the reward for mitzvah is the mitzvah itself. But to facilitate a person to do more mitzvos, he is given the schar, not because the schar itself is the end, but it's to give you more means to a greater end of more schar. And that's the schar mitzvah, the point of schar mitzvah. A third approach is from the Maharsha and Kiddushin. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik expands upon this, I once on Hawaii Torah, I want to share it down on it once, where he talks about the klal versus the yachid, the group versus the individual. Individually, there is no promise of schar in this world. You can't think that if I'm going to go ahead and, Baal Shuvah, I told this, but it's really not 100% always, can't say, if you become frum, you'll get married on time, and you'll have wealth, and you'll have a great life. Who says, We don't know what the cheshbonos of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, we don't know what his calculations are, why some are good, we don't know. On an individual level, we don't have any control on what life we're going to get because of what kind of good Jews we are. However, on a Klal Yisrael, on the group, then the promises are true. And throughout history, when Jews have been behaving, Jews are doing well. And if Jews sin, we get punished. And that is what the Torah means when all the promises is on a global level, or more global, or more of a community level, as opposed to an individual level. Rav Aaron says, this actually raises our mitzvahs to be very altruistic. That you're doing a mitzvah, and you should realize that it's not for your own benefit, but it's to help Klal Yisrael. So every mitzvah becomes more of an act that is being done to help out my fellow Jew. He says, furthermore, he says, what comes out is a person can't say in the negative, why do you care what I do? It's not your business. Would I eat not kosher, keep Shabbos? Why are you bothering me about this? I said, no, it is bothering me. Because any time a person is in Aveira, it affects all the Jews. It affects mankind nearly. The Gemara says that a person who makes no bracha is stealing from God and also stealing from Klal Yisrael. How come? Rashi says, because Peiros Lokin. If a person makes no bracha, then it detracts from what the field, what the trees produce. How come? You know, that's the metaphysically that when Jews do good, the world runs properly. When Jews do bad, the world does not run properly. I just heard actually on the way here about that. A certain non-Jew who believes this concept so much. He believes in. He's a Christian. He believes in Jesus was a prophet, but he doesn't believe in the divinity of Jesus. But his goal is to make the Jewish life for Jews the best and to make Jews go in Israel because he feels that the world throughout history had been much more on a high level and a great, much better, the world much more better off when Jews are doing the right thing and when Jews are being treated properly than the world itself. Globally, the world is on a much higher level. And to bring the Messiah, he feels you have to have the Jews do the right thing and to treat them properly. That will bring the Messiah in this person's opinion. And he spends a lot of money going throughout the world lecturing about this topic. But this is the idea. Now, why it works, I think the idea being that when a person does a mitzvah, God becomes more connected to the world, and then by definition, the world runs more properly. When a person sins, and that creates a rift between God and the world, so that naturally will then lead to less hashgacha pratis, and therefore, the world not running properly. You have natural disasters, and you have other things that just the world is not running in sync because God is distanced based upon the actions of people. A couple more things. The proper attitude for our days. Here's a famous thing that, I don't know if it's famous, but it's something that Rav Moshe Feinstein would very often talk about in his in the Darsh Moshe, and I heard about Baal Peh also, that from his Talmidim, things that he would very much push that, in terms of attitude, that he said what killed American Jewry back in the turn of the century was that parents, that even if they kept Shabbos, their attitude to the children will be shver to zayinu, that it's difficult to be a Jew. I've got to keep Shabbat, I'm going to lose my job. And he's complaining to their kids how difficult it was to stay religious. And he says, so the kids said, okay, that's for pops of the old country. You know, I'm now American, so why do I have to keep him for? If it's going to be a pain in the neck, why should I keep him? And he very much pushed, very much so, that a person should try to make to his children and to himself as well, to view mitzvot as not being a burden, as being, you know, not so beneficial, but that's easy. And especially nowadays where food is so available and Shabbos is so easy to keep. I mean, to try to push on an attitude level, not like against the rat, against that sifra. He says, that sifra, all that means, we say, you should say, oh, she's really delicious. Don't have that attitude. If you have that attitude, you get more schar. Yes, true. You'll get more reward if a person has an attitude that Shabbos is difficult and kosher is difficult. But it's not worth the reward because you're going to lose your kids. You're going to lose the frumkeit. So it's better to forego the extra reward of the attitude and push more and try to develop a positive attitude towards the learning. There's one couple more things. The Ramban, so yes, it's true that you saw there are sources in the Rishonim not to push for reason for mitzvah, but the Ramban was very much for trying to find mitzvahs. The way that Rabbi Soloveitchik and Rav explained it was that you can't, with the whole, the Gemara in Baruch Hu is talking, don't say that God was merciful, because you can't give reasons why God himself acted or gave you certain mitzvahs. However, the question is not why God told to you, but you should look for what I can gain from it. If I can gain mercy, that's okay. God may have given it for his own reason, who knows? But if I can get mercy out of Khan Sipor, out of Shulcha Khan, if I can get benefit out of Shabbos because I'll have a day of rest and I'll have a relax when the phone bothers me and the cell phone bothers me and I pay, then go ahead, talk about that, give those reasons. And the reasons can change over time as well. Benefits that may have existed 100 years ago may be different for us, and therefore you're allowed to always, and you should, seek out the, what does the mitzvah, how does the mitzvah help me, as opposed to why God gave it. It's a different question to ask, and what I can gain, that you should try to find out, and all for the point of trying to show how mitzvahs is beneficial. And the last makor, and getting back to mitzvah, how does it know? If a person is mudr hanah from a shofar, we say you're allowed to blow it, right? Because it's a mitzvah. However, the Mishnah says, if you're mudr hanah from a sefer, or from a person, you can't use his svarim. If you use his shofar for tkiyas shofar, you can't use his seif to learn from. So how come? Why can't you get pleasure from a person safe if you asked it or not from that, you said, I'm asking the Sefer Torah, you cannot read, you can't learn from that Sefer Torah, you can't learn from that book. How come? What about the concept of mitzvot aras for hanah? The person says that he makes a vow that this book, this Torah book, I can't get pleasure from. He's not allowed to read from that book and learn Torah from. How come? Or if he says, I can't get pleasure from you and you own a book, you own a Sefer Torah, I can't read from that because that's yours. I can blow your shofar, Rosh Hashanah, but I can't use your svarim if I can't get benefit from you. How come? So, you see, from when it comes to learning of Torah, somehow you can't get benefit if you can't, even though the concept of mitzvah l'harasim does not apply to Torah. How come? So Rav Amir Har has this incredible idea that when a person does a mitzvah like blowing shofar, so he doesn't have in mind for that hana, right? He's not doing it for his own personal hana. He's doing it because God told him to blow the shofar. However, when it comes to Talmud Torah, that the whole point of Talmud Torah is learn to get hana. Enjoy what you're learning. You have to enjoy what you're learning. It's in order to make us into knowledgeable people and to not make us into ignoramuses. And the whole point of Torah is for the benefit that to know the truth, know how to behave. It's all this ane v'lehonos b'mada l'shma. Learning l'shma means learn Torah, enjoy what you're learning. And therefore you can't apply the principle of it's a burden, because when it comes to Torah, it's all benefit. There's no burden, man. What the kids in class believe and feel, they have to, you know, one day hopefully they'll realize it, that the study, the ultimate pleasure is the study of Torah. The knowledge and just the feeling that I know the truth, I know what God wants, all that is benefit, that is why the concept of mitzvos lav leharos inu does not apply to the study of Torah. All right? Stop here.
Sure, thank you.